Happy New Year and welcome into 49ers Live. I'm Joe Fan, joined by my esteemed colleague to my left. He's Ted Robinson. Ted, welcome back, and sir, Happy New Year.
Joe.
2018, time flies and you're having fun.
Happy New Year. Doesn't it feel like the new year started the first Sunday of December in Chicago? Doesn't it feel that way?
Yeah.
In this venue in which we sit, in this world of the 49ers. But I've got to tell you, and I'm sure a lot of you, I'm sure you, Joe, and running around in your lively social life, I'm sure you've had this experience too. Yesterday, I'm visiting my friend who happens to be a terrific auto mechanic in Menlo Park, where I am, and he's a season ticket holder. And he says to me, this is the first time in 4 years. I'm actually looking forward to paying the renewal on my season tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you everything, doesn't it? We haven't heard that.
Changed everything.
The last few years. So this past Sunday was the appropriate ending, I think, to what we experienced.
What's wild is when you think back to how this year started, or 2017, a New Year's Day game against the Seattle Seahawks with Trevone Boykin bleeding the clock, marching down the field when the 49ers had a chance to beat the Seahawks.
Yeah.
That was how it started, getting beat by the Seahawks backup quarterback. It ends on a five-game winning streak, 49ers winning 6 of 7. And this is what it looked like on Sunday from the Coliseum in Los Angeles against the Rams. Now, this kind of had a preseason feel to it with the Rams benching their starters, but those guys get paid too, as they say. And George Kittle, he gets paid for 4 catches to 100 yards in this one. A new career high. He had a big day, all coming in the first half. Up 13-3 now. This is Carlos Hyde pushing the pile. Get Joe Staley to finish some touches on that one. He flies away. He's pumped. Everybody's pumped. Lowe's is pumped. Celebrating New Year's Eve right. This is his second touchdown, going full extension to the pylon. He had 8 touchdowns in 2017, a new career high. And then here we go. It's Aldrick Robinson putting the cap on it. This is right after Marquise Goodwin's injury, taking that vicious hit. He makes amends for his fallen teammate. And the 49ers roll 34-13, the final. Keep those highlights short and sweet. 49ers go off on a positive note. Jimmy Garoppolo, turns out he is human. 20 of 33, 292 yards. He had 2 touchdowns, also 2 picks. George Kittle leading the way with 100 yards. Hyde had 90. Breed had 72. It was another team effort.
Yeah, you know, you referenced Marquise Goodwin's injury, and it was really on every level wrong. I mean, it was just a horrible football play. It's the exact play that the game is taking great lengths to eliminate. I don't know, like everyone's saying, I can't put myself into the head of Blake Countess to know what his intent was there, but his actions were horrible, and that can't be accepted. The fact that Marquise is fine, we're all breathing easy, but that run by Carlos Hyde that you talked about with the push by the offensive lineman that's right after the injury, don't tell me they're not connected.
Yeah.
There was something, and I joked with Kilgore, Daniel Kilgore, on the flight home. I said, you get 3 of those 6 points, because he was the first guy to jump on Carlos's back. I can't stand that rule. I don't understand why they allow rugby scrums in football. But if they're allowing it,
might as well use to your
advantage. Well, everybody's doing it. So the 49ers offensive line there, it was Daniel kind of led the way, and then Staley jumps in, and suddenly you push Carlos the last 3 yards to get a touchdown out of it. But I thought that play had a little bit of extra behind it, because it was one or two plays, I think, just after Marquise's injury.
Yeah, somebody said post-game that, Jimmy Garoppolo came
there. There's Kilgore first in on him.
And said, we're going to score the very next play. They did just that. I love Joe Staley. The finishing touches into the end zone and kind of flies away back towards the 49ers sideline. You talk about some of the takeaways of this season, and obviously this season shifted dramatically on Halloween when the 49ers acquired Jimmy Garoppolo. Just a reminder, be a part of this broadcast. Ask a question. Our year-end broadcast, year-end review here on 49ers Live.
We're going to stay two and a half hours, aren't we,
but,
by the
way? Yeah, we are. We're here all day.
Don't
it's
laugh,
like a phone-a-thon.
Serena.
We're going to filibuster the 2018 offseason. Patience now all of a sudden is going to be key in terms of we saw the hype grow and mount locally, nationally. The Jimmy Garoppolo hysteria is alive and well. There's no stopping that hype train, but now it's going to take some patience. You heard John Lynch say yesterday in his year-end press conference, we want Jimmy to be here a long, long time. But that's all we're going to say, because we believe those conversations are best had behind closed doors. That's where they will take place, and I wouldn't anticipate you hear much until something is finalized.
Well, after what has gone on in this franchise, really, since the Super Bowl game, 4 years of very uneven quarterback play, never really feeling secure that you had the position settled the way, you know, in 2013 and 14, you really thought you had it settled, but the play was very uneven and deteriorated over time. To get to the point where the 49ers are now, Joe, and I really feel this way, you know, knowing you have a guy you want to keep, and now you have to get him signed. And it's not a good problem to have. It's an awesome problem to have. It's awesome. Bring it on. I mean, you actually have a guy. You have him. You identified him. The players love him. He seems to be very comfortable here. Now, I can sit here and say all this. I don't have to negotiate. I understand that. Someone else across the street's going to be in charge of negotiating with Jimmy Garoppolo's agents. But this is a great problem to have for the San Francisco 49ers right now.
How nice is it when you go into the offseason, you go into a draft with 100-plus million in cap space and the top 10 pick and I think double-digit draft selections overall, and your number one need isn't a quarterback. You finally have that question answered. Now you've got him here. It's still a challenge to get that deal signed, whether it's a deal, whether it's a franchise tag, whatever the answer is, for 2018 and beyond. But that's a luxury. Let's talk about progress. The 49ers had the ninth-ranked passing offense in 2017. A year ago, it was the dead last, 32nd. They had the 12th-ranked offense overall in terms of total yards, 31st a year ago in 2016. Defensively, we all know about the historically bad run defense in 2016 that ranked 32nd in the league, dead last. 7th overall this year in terms of yards per carry. So those are huge pinnacle statistics that show you how far this team has come.
Well, I think that's a great call, Joe. And the defense to me, and obviously Garoppolo and the offense has taken a ton of attention the last 5 weeks with great reason. But the defense story for the whole season, I think that's a great call. Because I don't know how else to say it, but last year it felt like the 49er defensive players were being placed in positions to fail, which is the exact opposite of, you know, sports 101, management 101. And as a result, the defense last year was statistically the worst in the history of the franchise. Hard to fathom. Way better this year. And the structure was way sounder, and the players were put in positions to succeed. And many of them did. There are still holes to fill, areas to get better. But think about this. The second half of the season, you played without Armstead. You played without Tart, right? And you played without Ward. That's two ones and a two that were significant players on this defense. They all didn't play the second half of the year. And the defense was the last five games, the wins, the points, and also not allowing teams to run the ball, right? Last season, and I have to try to curb this, but in 2016, it was, can we hold a guy under 100 yards?
It's bad.
Like, that was a major parade. What was it? Last six games, nobody got 100 yards against the 49ers on the ground. That's how much better this defense was.
It was really impressive. And outside of that Ezekiel Elliott game where he just absolutely steamrolled the 49ers defense, that was what you saw every week last year. This week, I mean, this year, yeah. You look at that Dallas Cowboys game as really the only one where you couldn't contain a guy. You brought up my next point, which is, to me, is a great point where you look ahead to free agency starts in March and you have the draft in April. But how about the free agency class that you immediately get back now that the season is over, looking ahead? And that's the injured reserve guys with Armstead, with Tart, with Ward, with Malcolm Smith, who we haven't seen yet.
That's right.
What does Joe Williams look like? What kind of piece is he? Pierre Garçon back into the fold. I mean, that's a whole free agency class in of itself that you get back into the lineup that should be difference makers.
Yeah, I think there's two names that I would point out there. And let's also frame Garoppolo in this sense. Garoppolo played and won five games without the number one receiver, right? Garçon didn't play. And most of those five games without the number one right tackle, Trent Brown, who when he did play this year, had a very good year and was graded very highly. So those two guys were not a part of things. So next year, you bring in, I mean, three guys. Aaron Burbridge. No one talks about Aaron Burbridge this year. Raheem Mostert, that's his credit. Raheem did a terrific job on special teams, filling the role that Burbridge had played very well here in the past. If you have them both next year, how much stronger could your kick teams be if you get them both back? You referenced Joe Williams. I think the 49ers are hopeful that starting in the spring and then into summer camp next year, they'll see the guy that they drafted. They really didn't see him this year. And it'll be big because he's going to have to show it. Joe's going to have to show it next spring to have a future here. But hopefully he does. And then the other guy's Joshua Garnett that got overlooked this year. But guards are vital in Kyle Shanahan's run game.
I mean, those are vital. Intriguing names.
Right. And so Joshua Garnett is a first-round draft pick who doesn't play this year. He's back. You see him there on the board. That, to me, if Josh Garnett can put into play what he did during this missed season by changing his body and becoming the type of guard more suited to the offense Kyle Shanahan wants to run, that could be, in essence, a free agent. He's a first-round pick.
We're going to get to the top 10 plays of 2017. We have the rundown all queued up. But first, a couple of questions from you on social media. And I love this question from Ian. What makes a bigger impact on offense, an elite running back or an elite wide receiver? I will tee it up to you this way. My take is this. They both can make the same impact, one of which is just much harder to find. And that's not to diminish the role of an elite running back, but there just aren't that many Julio Joneses in the league. And so to me... No. Just like finding an elite quarterback, it is just as hard to find that alpha dog wide receiver who can win in the red zone, who can you can throw it up to and have him make plays where you're not having to scheme him open. He can get himself open, or he's open even when he's not open.
In this five-game win streak, who's the guy that we saw? DeAndre Hopkins. That's the guy. And Julio Jones is the guy. You can count them. I mean, Beckham, when he's healthy, is clearly at the top. Those guys you can count on a hand, maybe two. That, to me, is what this franchise, it's been a long time. I mean, you probably have to go back to T.O. since this franchise had a guy like that. We saw Bolden here, and Bolden was terrific near the end of his run. And the first year Bolden played here, it was a 1,000-yard season. He was outstanding. But there was not an upside to Anquan. That was the last best of him. To try to find that kind of guy, I think, as this franchise goes forward, would be huge. The running back situation, to answer that question, I think what we saw over these last five games was plural, running backs. And what Kyle Shanahan, and it evolved, it was not announced, but it evolved into what really something similar to what he had in Atlanta
with Coleman and Freeman,
the way he used Hyde and Breida during this five-game win streak. They're different backs, there's no question. They each have strengths. And Kyle did a great job of playing to those strengths, but the way he alternated them reminded me very much of what he had in Atlanta.
Yeah, again, that's a great illustration. Just week 17, Carlos Hyde, 15 for 90, two touchdowns. Matt Breida, 12 for 72. Both those guys having success, and they're both on our top 10 plays of 2017. Let's roll the tape. Number 10, and we've got a milestone, maybe the biggest milestone of the year, and one of the nice free agent finds late in the summer for the 49ers, and that's Elvis Dumervil. Led the team in sacks. Here's his 100th of his career against Carson Palmer. Sayonara, Carson Palmer. Congrats on a great career. Elvis Dumervil showing he's not done yet. That's 100 for him. Number 9 is in week 2. And that's Carlos Hyde. His longest run of his career. 61-yard run. He really carried the 49ers in this game and gave them a chance to win, ultimately falling short by a couple of points. But what do you make of Carlos Hyde's year?
The first thing I'll tell you, and that was a great memory back in week 2, but to me the most significant thing for Carlos was 16 games, first time. 16 games healthy. 240 somewhere around carries. So that's one question that he answered. Carlos put that to rest. And the other obvious thing he did this year was demonstrate something he had not previously been asked to do much, catch the ball. He had over 50 receptions. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but he proved he could catch the ball out of the backfield. I think going forward for the 49ers at the running back position, Hyde, Breida, Joe Williams, whoever else is involved here, pass protection is going to be the next thing.
Number 8 is Matt Breida. Nice segue, Ted. And this is the one that put the icing on the cake and shut the door on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Beautiful play design by Kyle Shanahan. Defense going one way. Matt Breida going the other. 30-yard touchdown run. He was special this season.
And as the year went along, got better. And I think that's one of the best things we saw emerge during the five-game win streak, Joe, was what we saw from the rookies. Matt Breida here, who really, again, worked his way into a rotation with Carlos Hyde. He wasn't a second stringer the last five games. He was in a rotation. And just he played as well at the end of the season as he had all year.
Number 7 is the first defensive score for the 49ers since 2015, and it came courtesy of Dante Johnson. A big hit from Eric Reed. Results in a nice interception return for a touchdown for Dante Johnson. His second career pick six, and he had a tough time at times this season, Ted. A nice moment for him, and a big moment for the defense getting points on the board against Jacksonville Jaguars team that's headed for the playoffs.
Well, I think that's one going to be one big mission for the 49er defense in 2018 is more of this. They didn't have enough of these. I think this was the only defensive score of the year. Am I right, Joe?
Correct.
And that you want to change.
Last two years.
Yeah, that you want to change. You want to get more takeaways, and especially when the defense can score.
Number six, you remember Linsanity, but it had nothing on Celek Time, the movement that sweeped the nation. Look at this little move. Oh, yeah. That was against the New York Giants, the team's first win of the season. This a couple of weeks later against the Houston Texans. This would be a career-long 60-yard catch for Garrett Celek. A cut-up field. Hit the turbo button, breaking tackles. He said he looked up on the big screen, saw guys come and made sure to tuck it and not fumble. But just a couple of plays later, he got some wind back. Because clearly, he's gassed at that point. Play action, and here he comes. In the middle of your TV screen, wide open, Celek Time, touchdown. He's had a career high in touchdowns this year as well, Ted. A nice, consistent face in the 49ers offense.
Well, and I'll tell you, the best moment of the year for me from Garrett Celek, I think it was the post-game show after the Giants win. First win of the year, said, I've never been closer to teammates than this year's team.
And that was a common sentiment you felt from the 49ers locker room, both rookies, veterans alike. Let's move on to number five. Again, a lot of plays against Jacksonville because that was maybe the best game of the year, and this is a huge play. Jacksonville made a 19-0 run until Kaywan Williams makes this leaping one-handed interception, and he looks like he might take it to the house. A nice return. Jadon Mickens comes and gets a good lick on him, but not before Kaywan Williams gets his first pick of his career. Ted, this guy's already locked up for a couple more years going forward. They like what they see out of Kaywan.
Yeah, this was a another one of those unheralded players, Joe, this year. I don't think a lot of 49er fans, I didn't know much about him personally. And you really saw there was a gap there in the middle of the season in that 07, 08, 09 weeks where he was hurt. He missed. And that's when you recognized how valuable he was. You really missed Kaywan when he was out. And like a lot, like the most of the defense, the guys who played at the end of the year were healthy and strong.
Robbie Gould was absolutely money throughout this season. Here's the game winner against his former team, Chicago Bears. I don't know if we kept it in the cup. A little fist pump after this one. You know he was feeling himself. Joe Staley says when Robbie Gould starts making field goals, you can tell he starts feeling himself because he starts talking smack to their team. This is the game winner against the Titans. He said the Titans, no team talked more smack in his 13-year career than the Tennessee Titans in this game. Robbie Gould hit six of them, including this walk-off winner. Robbie Gould, end of the year on 23 straight, Ted.
Wow. I didn't know that about the Titans. I'm surprised to hear that. 39 field goals this year, Joe. And I joked with Robbie Sunday night. You know, he fell one short of 40. Only two kickers in the history of the league have ever had 40 in a season. And it's that two-sided coin. You really don't want that many field goals. But you know what? If you have to kick them, he was darn good, wasn't he?
He was absolutely good, as gold as they say.
And the presence he had with the team was really strong, Joe. In a year where a lot of the character in the locker room was being rebuilt, Robbie Gould was a big part of that.
100%. Moving on to number three. Oh, she's a beauty, number three. This is our guy, Jaquaski Tartt. Look at the end zone copy here.
Oh, yeah.
Going up, Intel free D status. Ooh! That is a pretty interception. The game was somewhat forgettable. Okay, completely forgettable for the most part. But Jaquaski Tartt, this was an absolutely phenomenal play. Maybe the defensive play of the year. Well, according to our list, it is the defensive play of the year. It came in week one. That's one heck of a pick. Full extension in the NFL film slow-mo. What more could you want?
And there are several players, Joe, this year, and Tartt was one of them, who've been around. This was his third year, but they blossomed this year under this new staff, new structure. Goodwin clearly on offense and Tartt on defense.
Here's Kyle Juszczyk against Houston. The offensive weapon checks in at number two. This is our producer Nate Steele's favorite play of the year. He loved this one. Hooting and hollering from behind the TriCaster over there. And double coverage!
Yeah.
A fullback downfield making that contested catch? Are you kidding me? Lay there for a second for good measure, and then get back up and go do it again. What a catch from the OW, the offensive weapon. A guy also, Ted, I think, who came on very late, very strongly.
Well, we found out why he was so valued. This is what he did in Baltimore. If you look at his record, he rarely carried the ball in Baltimore, but the Ravens used him quite a bit as a receiver, and that's what he did in college. He's an excellent receiver. So it's he kind of busts that typical fullback mold. When I talked to him late in the year, Joe, the one thing, we need him to meet Tom Rathman. I mean, yeah. The greatest fullback in the history of this franchise. Juszczyk was so valuable in the winning that the 49ers did late in the year that he needs to, and of course he wears the number too, he needs to meet Tom.
Drum roll, please. Number one, there was only one choice for this one. The longest touchdown of the year and the team's first win of the year, and this one we found out later had so much extra meaning. Marquise Goodwin got robbed of 1,000 yards, but man, this one went for 83. A house call, and you wondered why there was the emotion in the end zone. You later find out that he had lost his infant son, him and his wife. Absolutely tragic what this guy played through this year. Again, should have had 1,000 yards. He was an absolute home run of a signing in free agency for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and company. This is a huge moment for the 49ers season, but also in the career of Marquise Goodwin.
I hope everybody had a chance to hear. If they didn't, try to go online and find it. We had Marquise on our pregame show Sunday from Los Angeles, and you know, he spoke quite candidly about the year he's faced, both the loss of a child, the loss of his father, the reason really why he kneels for the anthem this year that we saw, you know, unjust incarceration of his father that, you know, cost, you know, the mental health and stability for his father who ended up dying. I mean, it's just there's so much and so many layers to Marquise Goodwin. And what we saw this year and why he was the Len Eshman Award winner, I'm sure, was that we saw the greatest play of his career as a player, right? I mean, without the injury Sunday, he probably gets 1,000 receiving yards. And we learned so much about him, and we were able to peel layers back. Not that it was intended, because it came under tragic circumstances, but we all learned so much about him as a person. And we found out what a remarkable person Marquise Goodwin is.
And we saw how close his locker room was, right? Marquise Goodwin, people start catching on that he's wearing white. Ever since this all went down, he's wearing white because it gives him something to focus on away from the tragedy and the heartache that he feels. Something he's always, you know, focused on. If you're wearing white, you got to know where you're sitting down, what you're leaning against. It was something that he got to focus on that took his mind away from it. Well, you know what? The entire wide receiver group on that plane ride to Los Angeles all wore white in solidarity with Marquise Goodwin. That's really cool.
Joe, on Saturday, when I did the interview with him in the hotel in Los Angeles, and he was wearing the white, and he made sure he put a towel down on the chair so not to stain the outfit. So at the end of the interview, it's funny because we were talking about playing in the LA Coliseum, of course, Marquise being a member of the United States Olympic team in the London Olympic Games. There's going to be an Olympics in 2028. I asked him kind of with the wink, and now, but I finally said, so who's going to run with you tomorrow? Meaning which Rams defensive back, and we didn't know exactly who was going to play. You know, was it going to be LaMarcus Joyner? Who was going to be the guy that would follow him? So I said, so Marquise, who's going to run with you tomorrow? Which one of those DBs? And he looks at me and he goes, no one. And that's just perfect answer. Track star, Olympian, run with me.
He's an
no
absolute
one.
Gem. If you haven't seen it, you got to go find that picture on the tarmac with all the wide receivers. They look like a Backstreet Boys cover photo, but the intent and the motivation behind it was very, very special. Ted, before we get out of here, a couple more topics. Let's talk about the rookie class a little bit. Because for all intents and purposes, I think John Lynch and his staff, Adam Peters, Martin Mayhew and company, Kyle Shanahan in conjunction with that, knocked it out of the park. With Solomon Thomas, who came on late, Reuben Foster, one of the best graded linebackers. According to Pro Football Focus, he was named Rookie of the Month in the NFL in the month of November. You can go on down the line. Akella Witherspoon maybe progressed as much as any rookie as I've seen from day one to the end of a season. You have Matt Breida as an undrafted guy. Adrian Colbert all of a sudden looks like this dynamo safety patrolling the back end of your defense. What do you make of the contributions from the year one players?
I think that's another big picture takeaway. Again, if we pull back from Garoppolo and the offense of the last six of the last seven, which were wins, at 0-8 and 0-9, you didn't hear a lot of raves about this rookie class. Look what you end up with when you see how important George Kittle was, Trent Taylor, Adrian Colbert, his seventh-round draft pick. He's a keeper. I mean, he showed that. He took advantage of opportunity, and he proved he's a keeper. Matt Breida, as you said, was a UFA. And then, of course, the top guys you expect. You expect Thomas and Foster to play. And then Akello became a really nice story because, again, I hear this a lot about quarterbacks and cornerbacks, of which Akello is one. You can't rush him. And the 49ers did not rush Akello early in the year. Well, I think he was inactive 4 games, Joe, I believe, the first four. Right. And by the end of the year, became the top cornerback on this team. They didn't push him, and I think that was incredibly valuable. The question, I think, now that is fascinating, if you say Akello's locked one side down, what happens on the other side on corner? And I'll talk out loud and say, with what Colbert's done and what Tart did this year, and Eric Reed's a free agent, so we don't know if he's going to be back. If he is, you're really good at the safety position. What about Jimmy Ward? What about Jimmy Ward back at corner? We know he can play there. And if you're thinking about going out into the free agent market and having to overspend for somebody or draft another corner, which has been discussed, what about Jimmy Ward? I don't know what the 49ers are thinking about that across the street here, but it was something I sure thought about the last week or two.
100%. Tiffany wants to know when the coin toss for draft positions taking place. Thanks for asking. We've got a nice little graphic here to show you the top 10. Unknown. Are the 49ers 9? Are they 10? The coin toss will take place against the Raiders here at the Combine in Indianapolis. And let me tell you, we will have full coverage of this dramatic sporting event that is the coin toss. John Lynch said yesterday he's going to spend all offseason practicing. I actually am genuinely curious, all joking aside, who gets to call it in the air? Is it the 49ers? Is it the Raiders? Do they play rock, paper, scissors for the right to call the coin toss? That sounds like it would make sense to me. Is it best 2 out of 3? What happens if it's not a good coin flip? Are they bringing a professional coin flipper? Because we've seen some at the beginning of games where, like, especially in bowl season, where they have celebrities do it or random people involved with the game, and they're bad. So I'm curious what's going on with this coin toss.
So the longest shot of the year, Joe, before the year, what do you think? It could have been saying, okay, I'm going to go to Nevada where it's legal and say, okay, I'm going to say the Cleveland Browns are going to make the Super Bowl. The 49ers are probably amongst the longest shots to do that at the beginning of the year. I'm going to tell you the longest shot in my mind in July, if you had said, I'm going to go to Vegas and find out and say that the 49ers and the Raiders are going to flip a coin for their first round draft pick. Right? Would that have been, what, 8 billion to 1 odds that could have happened?
Yeah.
A 2-14 team and a 12-4 team, right? But at the end of the year, they're going to end up tied for a first round draft pick. Could never have thought that.
It's amazing. Not all 6-10 seasons created equal. You know, you see, and that's what happens when you go into the season with expectations opposed to the 49ers, where, to the fans' credit, allowed Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to play out this season without necessarily the expectations of X, Y, and Z needed to happen. Obviously, you go to the East Bay in Oakland, all the expectations in the world that not only to be a playoff team but a Super Bowl contender, and all of a sudden, you know, 8-10 months later, this is where you're at.
Joe, I think you touched on something that's important here too, is that
that's a first.
I'm
eager to see what this is.
I didn't want to say that. Andrew was laughing. He thought the same thing.
What could I possibly have said? This is awesome.
that what happened the last 5 weeks and all of the focus on Garoppolo and what he accelerated with his offense could not have happened had what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and Adam Peters and everybody, coaching staff all the way through, starting back in April here in the OTAs and then the mini camps and through camp, and then through 0-9 and 5 straight ridiculous losses, overtimes and heartbreaks, etc. There was a foundation that was put down that was still strong. And I know when we sat here and talked about it, when I would talk about it on the radio, I'm sure a lot of people roll their eyes because you just see 0-5 and 0-7 and 0-9, and that's what counts. But I believe it. I know you believe it because you've been around here too. None of that last 5 games happens without the incredible foundation that was laid down that Jimmy Garoppolo walked into and then took the fullest, to his great credit, took the fullest advantage of.
I couldn't agree more. Ted, we got a couple things we got to get to before we get out of here on our year-end wrap-up of 49ers Live.
Remember this day?
That shot just looks so good. Just getting out of the SUV. Hair looking absolutely pristine. Nicely pressed flannel, or whatever that is.
Has a chance to be a day
that Levi's jeans.
That will be forever remembered in this franchise's history.
Before we get to this, I'm going to don't put you on the spot. I want your New Year's resolution for the 49ers. Before we get to that, our home and road opponents are set for 2018. You have the AFC West on the calendar. You have the NFC North on the calendar. Then you add in the Giants and the Bucks. What do you make of the slate ahead for for the 49ers in 2018.
Well, the best part of the, you're asking the wrong guy. The best part of the schedule to me is there's only one game in the Eastern time zone. The only trip of any substance for a West Coast team, we have to say, you know, you have Midwest trips coming to Green Bay and to Minnesota and to Kansas City. The only trip's Tampa Bay. That's the only trip of any appreciable distance, the only game in the Eastern time zone. That only happens once every 4 years for the 49ers, and it may not happen in some of those years because the last time it was Detroit. The last time this year's cycle came around, we had to go play at Detroit, which is Eastern time zone. So anyway, the schedule from that standpoint, travel-wise, is about as good as you could ask. You have two games in Los Angeles, although you have to go play on a soccer pitch. I don't understand that. But
good lingo, though.
And one game to Seattle, one game to Phoenix. You have four games that are just up and down the coast. That's nice. My New Year's resolution, I want 45 sacks next year for the 49ers. That's what I want, 45
I like
sacks. That's almost three a game. That's, to me, I think if you look back and maybe Solomon gets, you know, as he matures and gets into this, he gets more. If Armstead can come back and be healthy, that can help. I think we saw, and these are the things that you can't overlook. Certainly John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan will not overlook them amidst the five-game win streak. The fourth quarter of the Jacksonville game, you did the one thing you always want. You made Jacksonville one-dimensional. Still couldn't get to the quarterback. Couldn't get to him. And that's an area this team needs to, I think, that's about as prominent as any area this team needs to address.
And when you can get, if you can get, again, we talk about positions that are hard to find, that Von Miller, alpha male, pass rusher, hard to find, not necessarily him specifically,
right.
but that guy in general,
yeah,
just
it.
Like we're talking about how hard it is to get an elite receiver, just as hard to get that guy. If you can find that piece, whether it be in the draft or free agency or in a trade, if a team is looking to dump some contracts and looking for a rebuild, the 49ers can take that pivotal piece. Who knows? I'm just speculating. I have no idea. But that immediately, you talk about how Jimmy Garoppolo makes everyone better on offense. Well, that guy immediately makes DeForest Buckner
exactly
better.
Right.
That guy immediately makes Solomon Thomas better. So you're going to see their sack numbers increase as well when you've got this horse off the edge who's wreaking havoc on every play.
The man that really made Alden Smith here was Justin Smith. Justin Smith was extraordinary and just a brilliant player. And the combination, once Alden came in here, the way Justin and Alden worked together was extraordinary. And so if you think you have that next, you know, guy that plays the Justin Smith type of role in DeForest, you have Solomon Thomas that can be that strong interior defensive lineman. Now you need the guy to mix with them that can cash in. We saw a player take advantage of a chance. Cassius Marsh came in here late in the year, and he showed something because he had a little more spark to get to the quarterback than the 49ers had seen this year. The other player on the defensive front that really made a mark coming in here and I think's got a role here is Sheldon Day. That was another terrific pickup by the 49ers. And Sheldon Day, now he's an interior guy. He's not a pass rusher. But he really played well in there alongside Earl Mitchell. So those are guys that I think Marsh and Day, as this team configures during the offseason, I'd be surprised if they're not a part of this.
Last question. We'll go to Twitter. For our friends from the Seattle Faithful, what's the number one thing you're looking forward to heading into next season? I'll take this to lead off, and I'll let you piggyback. Stability. I mean, we don't know what a slow January and February looks like. I'm looking at the calendar, especially now the 49ers aren't coaching the Senior Bowl, which seems to be a lock back in September. All of a sudden, you don't have much going on until the combine in late February. And that's amazing. When you're not looking for a head coach and you're not looking for a GM, when you have your scouting department that's already in place, you have a coaching staff that's in place. Granted, there might be a few tweaks here and there whether guys take college jobs and whatnot, but that's a special place to be when you're trying to build something.
Absolutely. Look, it was miserable the last 4 years in a row to have the day after the season, to have everybody flocking here for more, you know, after-the-fact press conferences, what are we going to do, to have all of the people that work with your customers here having to answer phone calls, explaining to customers why this is going on. None of that had to happen this year. And I mean, my gosh, that's just – it's the best feeling in a while. And I think, again, Joe, what 2017, as we start 2018 now, what 2017, to me, if we're going to try to sum these things up in bullet points, one of my, if not my top bullet point, was it was all about football. It was all about football here in Santa Clara, and that was needed. And it happened. and it was football people making football decisions based on what was best for football. Now, I sound like a cliche machine. I acknowledge that. But I think everyone who's followed the 49ers very fervently in the last few years understands that point.
I love it. John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan came in day one. They said, we're going to change the culture. That's where it starts. And pretty impressively, not even a full calendar year later, you can see that's taking place.
And I'm going to tell you, Joe, we haven't talked about, to me, maybe the most significant moment of the season in this vein, the vein we're just talking about right now, was Navarro Bowman's release. That this was decided, that this was a football decision. It had nothing to do with money, obviously. The 49ers, it cost them money to make this move. It was a football decision that was made in what the leaders believed was in the best long-term position for this franchise, was to let Navarro go and to let him go play someplace else. And it was done. It was done. There was no conversation about anything else. And it was a decisiveness that we saw in many other, you know, benching Brian Hoyer in the middle of a game. Decisive move, right?
Rashard Robinson.
At Rashard Robinson. Exactly. Decisive move. So I think Navarro was the headliner in that. You point out the other ones that are good. But to me, that's what made 2017 different here, was that it was football people making being decisive, being able to act on those decisions, and acting in everything that they believe. And look, no one bats 100%. Some of these things may turn out to not be great moves, but you want them to be made. You want decisiveness. It's what this franchise needed, and I think it's what 2017 delivered in a huge way.
100%. 2017 was fun. 2018 projects to be much better. So much to come this offseason. Obviously, patience with Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be key. 100 plus million in cap space to spend. Top 10 pick in the draft. So much to come. We'll have it covered here on 49ers Live. Stay tuned to 49ers social media for when we'll be back. Until then, though, Ted Robinson, I'm Joe Fan, wishing you a very happy New Year.
Wish him. He's going to be a globetrotter. Wish him well. Bring me
so
back.
Much.
Bring me back stuff. Please.
Thanks so much for
My hands
joining
are open.
Us. I'm going to London. Yeah, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here.
Good
taking
for
some
you.
Vacation time. But we appreciate you joining us all season long. It's been a lot of fun. And again, looking forward to more fun times in the future. Until then, thanks for watching.
Remember the three words, Joe. Guinness for strength.